Ladies and gentlemen, this is Wally Butterworth, proud to narrate a special program for that noble Christian patriotic order, the Knights of the Ku Klux Klan. If ever the American people had cause to throw that communist gangster mob, the United Nations, out of this country, it is right now. The United Nations Committee or Subcommission on Racial Persecution has staged a full week of race riots in Atlanta, Georgia, that just missed exploding into full-scale revolution. The former Atlanta Jew Morris Abram, American representative on this committee, planned and led this mob of international gangsters here to see what Abram calls racial persecution firsthand. The purpose was to make spurious movie films and put a distorted commentary on them and then take them back to the UN. The infamous Mayor Ivan Allen and his police chief, Herbert Jenkins, were sponsors of this treason, along with another Atlanta Jew, Sam Massell, the vice mayor. These riots were allowed with full police protection, guidance, and management. America can thank one single organization, the Knights of the Ku Klux Klan, for preventing wholesale bloodshed in this town. The Honorable James R. Venable issued an ultimatum to Mayor Allen, giving him 48 hours to remove all Negro policemen from the streets and get these rioting black monkeys off the street or in jail. If not, he would issue the call to bring every Klansman in Georgia and the entire United States here to protect the lives and safety of white citizens. As a result, these black apes were tried and fined in trials that are still going on till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. They're conducted by the eminent and fair jurist Durwood Pye of the Superior Court. These riots were also traced to the Council on Foreign Relations, headed by that international subversive here, Ralph Rastus McGill of the Atlanta newspapers. This arch scoundrel controls the biggest TV and radio outlets. He enlisted all the other stations to applaud these niggers in their bid for social equality. You listen to this recording from the scene of the riots, you'll learn that the only social equal of screaming niggers is a bunch of bawling hyenas. And these rioters are not ordinary cotton patch niggers. Oh, no. These are college students from Nelson Rockefeller's tax-free foundation college, and those of Henry Ford of the Ford Motor Company. They also include white trash from Quaker nigger-loving schools like Swarthmore College in Pennsylvania. The U.S. Congress has refused to ratify the genocide pact of this UN. Therefore, this subcommission is a gang of foreign invaders interfering in the affairs of a sovereign state. They're now on tour, led by this Jewish swine, Abram, the American representative. This bird's principal racket is distributing sex smut books and nude pornography to destroy your children. He also belongs to Sweet Adlai Stevenson's law firm in New York. The Klan will never stop until this traitor Ivan Allen and his Jewish vice mayor Sam Massell have resigned from office, and the former police chief Jenkins is fired. Listen now to our interview from the scene of the riots. The Klan isn't fooled by this other Jew, Charlie Leb, the restaurant owner. He was a strong integrationist, but he now practices segregation to take the heat off all other Jews. This will give you a preview of what's going to happen in your town when the UN troops join the American police Gestapo in the takeover of the USA, unless this damnable United Nations is either blown up or blown out of this country. Ladies and gentlemen, we are speaking to you now from Leb's restaurant at Lucky and Forsyth Street. It's our pleasure to talk and interview Mr. Charlie Leb, who is the president of this corporation and the owner of this and many other fine restaurants around town in this chain. We know, and you know, that the facts of this matter have not been given, the true facts, on television, on radio, and in the press. We thought we'd like to come over in the interest of every man in this country who owns a restaurant or any other business and get the truth direct right from the owner of this establishment. May I present to you Mr. Charlie Leb. Come in, Mr. Leb, and say hello. How long has this whole thing been going on, sir?
About a year and a half.
Has it been sporadic or Continuous?
It's been sporadic. It goes in streaks. It'll go for a little while, and then it stops, and then it come back again.
And this last trouble started on Saturday, right?
That's right. Last Saturday.
Tell us the details. How many niggers first pushed in and invaded and forced the doors?
Well, I wasn't here when they forced the doors, but I was called, and as I came down, the streets were black with Negroes, and the place here was packed, and all the white people ran out.
How many on a counter, an estimated count?
About 250. Of a restaurant that only has 175. And as I approached the door, we had seven Negro policemen outside and one lieutenant in charge. And all the white...
Why do you think they placed, this man Jenkins placed these Negro policemen here? Wasn't it further to...
I wouldn't say Jenkins did. I don't know who did.
Well, wasn't it further to incite racial tension?
Well, I imagine that's their objective, but I don't know who put them here or who placed them here, but I saw Negro policemen in charge of a lieutenant, and all the white policemen were all across the street. There may have been 50 of them. I approached a white policeman and asked him why this is going on. And they said, well, we have nothing to do about it. The man in charge is over there, pointing out to a lieutenant, a colored lieutenant. I think his name is Blough, B-L-U-G-H. I'm not sure.
Yes, sir.
And as I walked in here, there's a mob scene here. They're in the windows, they're climbing tables and chairs and everything else.
Climbing up on top of the table?
Top, sitting on tables, doing
Did
everything.
Did you have customers here? Were you a regular
client? When I got here, all the customers ran out.
They had gone?
They had gone. And then about 4 o'clock, I talked it over with some of my employees, and we decided to close. And I closed the doors at 4 o'clock, and I asked, and why not close the door? There was a lieutenant, a white captain here, with a colored policeman. And I asked him to please get everybody out. I'm closing. And we told these colored people, we're locking the doors. Will you please get out? 38 was the count given, refused to leave. And all that was left was me and a couple of boys that worked for me.
What kind of a... They made an awful mess of your restaurant, didn't they?
They broke the tables. They broke the chairs, our boots. They were in the windows, standing on tables or sitting on tables and singing and carrying on and making signs here to the people on the outside. They were with him, and I asked the captain of police to please get them out. He said he can't do it.
He refused?
He refused. He
refused to lock them up? Why?
I didn't ask to lock them up. I asked him to get them to leave.
Yes.
They refused to leave. Well, how could two policemen handle a mob like this to get them out?
Well, and they tell me that they used the walls and floors of your place as toilets. Is that right?
We locked the toilets and everything else, so we wanted to get them out. And they, urinated. On the floor and in boxes. Three women did. That's what I was
told.
What
kind of boxes?
Bus boxes where we put our dirty dishes.
I understand that there was stool and dung in silverware and things of that kind.
Yes, I missed a lot of silverware. And so I finally decided as long as the policeman is there, and I kid, they won't do nothing about it, I'm going to leave. And I went out about 9:30, I think. And the two boys that were left here took charge. And about 11 o'clock they left.
Mr. Lebb, have you gotten any kind of an injunction against the mayor and the chief of police in this matter?
No, I have not.
Isn't that the proper legal steps to take?
I wouldn't know.
I see.
I don't know where to go for.
What do you feel about this tyranny that you've been suffering here and the ruination of your business?
I blame the police department for not doing what they're supposed to do to uphold the law.
Tell me that they were marching around the place here both Saturday and Sunday, and when they decide they've had enough and want to go to jail, they say, let's go to jail, and they all lie down on the sidewalk. Is that right?
Well, I didn't know that. That's on the outside. See?
Yes.
But they lie down here all over the place.
They were.
And running around, and they wouldn't sit still. The police and the captain of police couldn't make them sit down.
Did any of them expose themselves, take the clothes off?
I was told, one of the girls, I was told by one of the waitresses here, I think she can give you more information. There's a little lady over there.
Yes.
I believe can tell you what happened as far as exposing themselves. I didn't see anything.
Yes, sir.
And when I have a young man here, when they approached, he saw what went on and called the captain. The captain turned his head, didn't even look, wasn't interested. And I just stay here till 9:30, and I can't close my own store.
Oh, Mr. Lebb, you don't mind if we talk to a couple of the girls here
No, your establishment, do what you like.
All right, sir, now...
I just told you my side of the story, and that's about what I know.
All right,
and
we're
not
with you.
I'm not happy about it, because following Tuesday, police wouldn't let my customers in.
Yes, sir.
kept him off the street and wouldn't let him come near here.
I know that, sir, because I was coming over myself to try to see you the other night, and with a smirk on his face, some goon sergeant, I won't call him a policeman, I think he was an armed thug.
You are wrong.
Said, nobody's crossing this street,
well,
mister.
Well, you are wrong to taking that attitude, because that man is working for a living. He's under orders. Don't blame him.
Well, so is the Army under orders,
well,
sir.
Well, you can't blame a policeman.
No, but when a policeman has to go out distort the law...
Well, what should he do? Quit his job? He's lucky he's got maybe a family man.
No, he doesn't. They have a police association, and what they could do is walk into that mayor's office and say, look, you resign in 24 hours or we do.
I wouldn't expect a policeman to do that. How far would he get? He'd only lose his job. No.
Well, I congratulate you, Mr. Lev. I think you're very generous, and I think you've been very tolerant in this matter.
Well,
ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to talk now with one of the young ladies. Would you slide just over there a little bit, please? Tell us your name.
Mrs. Hazel Meadows.
Meadows? Miss Meadows, where do you live?
Smyrna.
In Smyrna, Georgia?
Yes, sir.
Oh, what is that? Local, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
Pretty much. Tell us a little bit about what happened. Saturday night was the worst, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, sir. It was terrible. They were marching up and down and making faces at all the white people, flirting with the women, putting their hands out, and police...
Were they feeling women touching them?
Tried to touch me, and I ducked, running across the street, yes, sir.
Yes. Out on the street, this was?
Yes, sir.
All right, now tell me about the mess that they had. I know that this is indelicate, but we've got to tell the American people the truth. Did these people expose themselves, take off their clothes in this place?
I didn't see it, sir.
You did not?
No, sir. All I did was clean the mess that was made by these people.
Was there excrement, dung in silverware and dish trays and what have you?
Sir, I couldn't begin to tell you. It took me 3 hours to clean it, and then it wasn't clean. There was ashes in the pickle buckets. There was urine in glasses, in coffee pots. They excreted all over the booth, smeared all over, even on the wall, sir. Everything. They took checkbooks, destroyed them. I just couldn't begin to tell you. Mustard all over. It was a wreck.
Isn't that awful? And yet the police wouldn't lock them up or get them out.
No, sir. No, sir.
Well...
And the thing of it is, in my case, I have to make my living day by day.
Yes.
I've had a lot of sickness with the children. In fact, right now, last night, my gas and lights were cut off. Now, that's the God's honest truth.
Really, Mrs. Meadows?
Yes, sir, because...
What does your husband do?
Well, he's a window decorator with National Shirt Shops.
Yes.
He makes pretty fair, but it's all the sickness that we've had.
Yes. How many children have you, Mrs. Meadows?
I have six.
Six children?
Yes, sir.
What ages are they?
Well, I have one going to college. I'm trying to work day and night to put him through, and he's 20.
Yes.
I have one 21, and I have one 14, one 12, and a pair of twins 10.
You're a brave little lady,
may I say.
Tell us a little more about the rioting that went on here. Were the employees frightened?
Yes, sir, because we didn't have no protection against anything.
And the police, were the police looking through the windows at this?
Oh, yes.
They saw the whole thing happen?
Oh, yes, they did. They did.
Didn't raise a hand?
No.
Never pulled a gun?
No, sir, nothing.
Wouldn't even come in the place?
Nothing.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is the kind of law we have in Georgia. And Charlie Lebb stands up here and says the police are not to blame. I heard one man, and I'm very happy to tell you that he was a Klansman, walk up to a policeman, and he said, when you go home tonight, I want to ask you if you agree with this, Ms. Meadows. He said, when you go home tonight, get down on your knees in front of your wife and apologize to her for marrying a dirty yellow cur instead of a white man. Do you agree with that?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir, very much so.
What do you think is going to be the eventual outcome of this?
I'm afraid to even think. I have children growing up. I'm afraid to even think about it. I can't answer that.
Do you think there's going to be bloodshed?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Plenty of bloodshed. I'm afraid so. Who do we have to protect us? Who?
Do you know that James R. Venable issued an ultimatum, so to speak, to the mayor?
No, sir.
And said that he would call upon every Klansman in the entire United States to march in here and protect white people.
Then evidently we need the Klan's help.
We're
not getting nobody else.
And we're going to... Well, no, you're not getting the help of another organization in this country but the Klan. But I believe you will get it.
What happened? They'd take these fellows down there at the police department, and the first day they locked up 84, and Chief Jenkins released them all, didn't he?
Well, we saw them on the streets all the time. Same faces.
And yes, they were back here the next day, and the same people locked up.
Yes, sir.
Do you know that they're coming from these Negro colleges out here?
Oh, we recognize many of them.
Do you know them from Atlanta University and Spelman?
I read in the paper that's where they came from, these universities here, yes, sir.
Yeah, they've got a so-called church out here they use as their communist headquarters, out on Chestnut Street. Thank you, Mrs. Meadows. I appreciate your kindness very much, and good luck to you. Have courage. You're going to be protected. Ladies and gentlemen, now I'm going to introduce another lady. You are a head waitress here, are you not?
Head waitress.
What is your name?
Ms. Adora McRae.
Come on, sit down here, Ms. McRae, and you and I'll do a little chatting. When were you here Saturday and Sunday past when the trouble...
I was here when they entered the restaurant. They knocked me against the door. So we asked them to leave, and they wouldn't leave. So in the meantime, Mr. Charlie, he came in, and he asked them to leave, and they wouldn't leave. And he asked the policeman if he would get them out, and he said he'd have to get a warrant to get the people out of there.
Did he have to have a warrant to let them in?
No, he did not. They pushed in against us. It was myself and two more waitresses and the cashier here at the time.
Did the police attempt to stop them when they came
in?
No,
they did not.
So he needed a warrant to get them out and take them down to the Hooskow, but he didn't need a warrant to get them in.
Yes, sir.
Do you
That's
think
right.
they came in here, Mrs. McRae, under orders from downtown?
Yes, I do.
Jenkins and Allen.
Right.
Mrs. McRae, are you aware of the fact that when these niggers were coming in here, these riots were planned 10 days before in New York City, and Morris Abram had brought down here a committee of the United Nations to observe racial persecution in Atlanta, and that this thing was staged for just that purpose?
I do believe that.
And do you know, since we have not recognized or ratified the Genocide Pact of the United Nations, this was a completely illegal committee?
It certainly was.
Did you know that Mayor Ivan Allen himself made the reservation for 42 of these UN delegates on this committee?
No,
For a dinner atop the Mart restaurant?
No, I didn't know that.
Well,
heard
we
that.
Do. You heard that, too.
Yes, sir, I
we
heard
do
it.
Because we checked it firsthand.
Yes.
They had the famous steak Chateaubriand over there. I think it's about $5 a copy, isn't it?
I think so.
And more, with wine included. And that half of those delegates were from Negro countries in Africa?
I heard that, sir.
That, my dear Mrs. McRae, is why you are suffering here in this restaurant all of this tyranny and persecution and terrorism.
Yes, sir, and I would like to say to everybody in the United States that because Mr. Lebb had to close his restaurant down, I had to go and borrow money to feed my 5 little grandchildren. I'm a widow woman, and I work from day to day for a living for my tips. I make a small salary. When we cannot come to work and leave our loved ones at home, we are afraid to leave our loved ones at home, afraid these niggers will go in and abuse them. And the way they did here Saturday, and one of them, I was moving my pickle buckets out from under them. One of them said, "You dirty bitch, take your hands off of that."
No.
Bucket. They certainly did say that.
Did they use much profanity?
That's what one of them said to me. "Take your hands off this bucket, you dirty bitch."
What do you think is going to be the solution to this?
Well, I think it's going to be a bloody war if there's something not done about it. But I think the mayor of Atlanta could help us if he would.
He won't.
But I know he will not.
Do you think he should be forced to resign from office?
I certainly do.
And how about his chief of police?
I certainly do.
How about Governor Sanders?
Well, I think he should be thrown out.
The membership of the Ku Klux Klan is just good people who love their Bibles and live by their churches. They never ate or housed with niggers, and they don't intend to begin now, even if a communist Congress passes 50 civil rights bills. Every Klan member, male and female, will die fighting before these Washington traitors can enslave the white race. The Klan alone was in the streets to protest these police-protected black riots. Question. Where were you members of the John Birch Society, supposed leaders in this fight against communism? Robert Welch, the Ku Klux Klan saw American Jew communism in action with Khrushchev Gestapo police ready to kill protesting white men instead of rioting niggers. All talk and no do is neither a good offense or defense. Question. Where were you members of the formerly white citizens' councils? The Klan doesn't want words of protest. It want action of protest. Get with it, boys and girls. Question. Where were you ladies of the United Daughters of the Confederacy, and why aren't you making ready to march on the City Hall right now to demand Ivan Allen's and Sam Massell's resignation? Your house needs to be put in order, too. Do you ladies honor your grandmothers as daughters of the War of 1865 and disown them as daughters of the Reconstruction of 1866? In love and affection, the Klan says to you, take off your long white gloves and grab your sewing needles as did your glorious grandmothers. They put together 400,000 robes for men and horses without one single secret being betrayed. The Klan needs you today more than it ever needed your grandparents. And the Klan will respond with the call for help, with the same chivalry as it did in 1865. But it begs of you, don't wait until hundreds of your pure daughters have been mauled and ravished by drunken black beasts. Face realities with the sons of Confederate veterans. Finance our joint program and re-justify your very name, United Daughters of the Confederacy. If you don't, then the heritage you so proudly boast becomes a mockery and a laughingstock, doesn't it? And doesn't the same apply to you sons and daughters of Union veterans? This is America we're defending, not the South. We say to the UDC that if you will respond, then the South will lead the Northeast and West. And again all over this country, good old-fashioned rebel yells will ring out. It is a former Yankee who tells you this. And so it goes for the American Legion, the Veterans of Foreign Wars, Kiwanis Rotary, and the Lions Club, and all the others. Where were you servicemen? The Klan says to you all, rebuild your houses as the Klan has done. Throw out the Antichrist traitors and the rabble. If you don't, then eliminate all flag ceremonies from your organization. Because the flag represents the Constitution you shouldered a gun to defend against Kaiser, Bill, Hitler, Mussolini, and Tojo. Is it any different, enemy? If it is the ape mentality of a nigger led by American communist Jews, smearing human excrement on silverware plates and walls of a white restaurant that doesn't want animals for customers? It is far better to throw every American Legion post charter in the garbage than to be forced to display in a single Legion hall the slave charter of a United Nations. Think it over. The Klan wants you all to unite and send 2 million white citizens to march on Washington on July the 4th next and halt every vestige of American socialist communism in our government. If you don't halt these congressional traitors, our country is lost. The Klan wants a 500,000 pickets at the political conventions of these Democrat and Republican scoundrel traitors. Act now, and we get the guilty alone. Wait for the slaughter of civil war, and the Negro gets your wives and daughters. The Knights of the Ku Klux Klan utters the prayer and calls upon the shade of glorious Patrick Henry. Forbid it, Almighty God. This is Wally Butterworth. Goodbye, all. The purpose of this recording is to tell the American people the truthful meaning of the noble Christian fraternal order, the Knights of the Ku Klux Klan, and to tell you why you, if you can qualify, should become a Klansman or Klanswoman. The Ku Klux Klan is a secret religious order, but it is not a clandestine organization, and it never has been. It is the prayer of every Klansman that it will not again have to become an avenging organization. But if our courts, our Congress, and our President continue to oppress the white Caucasian race, denying us those God-given rights which are not government-given rights, then we shall once again avenge these tyrannies and prove worthy of our Protestant Christian ancestors. Look at history for a moment. In 1865, the Garden of the South was turned into a desert by General Sherman's army. 10,000 homes and plantations were burned to the ground. Confederate money was worthless. Poverty was everywhere, but a brave people decided to weather the storm. It isn't taught in our schools, but every historian now knows that the Civil War was not fought over slavery of the Negro. It was fought and planned by European Jewish bankers in London, England, the Rothschilds, in fact, to gain the manufacture and control of American money, which they have to this day under the Federal Reserve banking system. Slavery was only the political excuse. Not only had most of the Southern state legislatures passed resolutions condemning slavery, but hundreds of the largest slave owners had freed their slaves, even going back to Thomas Jefferson. Judah Benjamin, the second in command in the Confederacy, was an agent of the Rothschilds, as was J.P. Morgan in the North and later Jacob Schiff, and before the both of them, Alexander Hamilton, whose real name was Levin. He was the illegitimate son of a Jew who started the first bank of the United States, which was later broken up. Abraham Lincoln refused to pay these Jews the interest to finance the war. The $400 million he printed on the credit of the American people is the only money in this country upon which we pay no interest. When Lincoln planned to ship the freed slaves back to Africa and remove the cause of the trouble, he was assassinated by these Jews, and the blame for his assassination was easily placed upon the South. John Wilkes Booth had the real name of Boothby. He was a Jew. Lincoln's whole plan is now proven history. There were no prisoners of war when General Lee surrendered. The war, terrible and bloody as it was fought by honorable men in both blue and gray uniforms. 2 years after the war was over, in 1867, Thaddeus Stevens, who certainly must be considered the vilest American who ever lived, gained control of the Congress. He refused to seat the elected senators and representatives the South had sent back to Washington, and he placed former Negro slaves in their places. This club-footed, warped-minded creature was the disgrace of the North. His mulatto mistress was the first lady of the land in Washington. Both of them are buried in a common grave today in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Every white man who had fought for the Confederacy was disfranchised. Only illiterate black slaves who couldn't read or write were allowed to vote. Every state legislature, every court of law, and all police authority lay in the hands of Negroes and white scallywags. In South Carolina alone, the treasury was looted by these people of over $50 million. A tax of $50 a bale was placed on cotton, which robbed the impoverished South of another $67 million. The foreclosure of homes for taxes took away three-quarters of the white man's land. And then came the arming of these completely uneducated black men, not only armed with guns, but with liquor. Overnight, imprisonment of white men and women without trial took place. And finally came the rape of fair white women by their former slaves. The bravest Southern men, led by all of the clergymen of that day, went to see General Lee. Contrast that with the traitor clergy we have today in all denominations. General Lee, too, knew that our government had broken faith and sent a 500,000 federal troops plus 200,000 drunken armed Negroes here to the South. General Lee told these men that he had pledged his honor and was on parole. He told them to go and see General Nathan Bedford Forrest, and that whatever movement they adopted would have to be underground and operate in greatest secrecy. It was General Lee who suggested the name the Invisible Empire. Thus was born in Pulaski, Tennessee, the Invisible Empire of the Ku Klux Klan. It was taken strictly from the ancient tribal clans of Scotland whose descendants had settled the southern states. No cross of Jesus Christ was ever desecrated by that first clan, nor by any clan ever since. Yet renegade journalists like Julian Harris, the son of Joel Chandler Harris of Uncle Remus fame, won a Pulitzer Prize by inferring that niggers were burned on the fiery cross of the Klan. And subversive traitors today like Ralph McGill, Rastus McGill, continue the smear. But within a year, the Negro was completely disarmed. Troublemakers, both white and black, were invited to leave the South, and they left. Even mayors and military officials. The ravishers of white women, both white and black, were hanged without mercy. All were flogged for lesser offenses. The Klan restored law and order to the nation, and within 2 years, General Forrest ordered them disbanded. The history of the Ku Klux Klan is unparalleled. A people who were helplessly ground in the dust of defeat rose within 2 years to complete victory. The Klan did more than save the virtue and purity of Southern white womanhood. It saved the honor of the then disgraceful United States government. Why do you suppose it is that no meeting of Klansmen or Klanswomen can ever be opened until the sacred altar is prepared on which rests the Holy Bible, and only after the fiery cross is illuminated? In the early days it was illumined by candles, today it is done by electricity. To give you the spiritual explanation of the fiery cross, we are proud to introduce an old and dear friend and Klansman of many years, the Reverend H.G. Hill of Atlanta, Georgia. Every clavern of the Klan, and the word clavern is taken from the underground cavern where the first Klan met in secrecy, every clavern has an officer known as the Clud. He is a man of God, either an ordained minister of the gospel or a lay preacher. Such a man is the Reverend Hill.
I am the light of the world, saith the Lord our God. Turn to your Bibles, dear friends, and read it in the 9th chapter, 5th verse of St. John. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. The cross of Calvary is the symbol of Jesus Christ our Lord. The cross of Christ is not to be buried in darkness. It is illuminated to shine forth as a salvation of all mankind. It is a fiery cross proclaiming his presence amongst us, his children, night and day. That is the true and only meaning of the fiery cross of the Ku Klux Klan. Hence, every Klansman, as he travels through the mystery of the Klan craft, realizes that the fiery cross is the true symbol of the living Christ, the criterion of a Klansman's character. The descendants of the great clans of Scotland, who settled our southern state, not only banded together in the traditional gatherings of their clans, but they also made the fiery cross their symbol. From the beginning of the Scotch history, a young knight of the family clan was chosen to carry the cross in battle. Whenever this knight was killed or wounded, another would snatch up the cross and carry it aloft before the tribal soldiers. Thus, they were truly soldiers of the cross, and that is why, to this very day, a large gathering is called a rally of the clans. No man can become a clansman, no woman can become a clanswoman, unless they be members of the white Caucasian race, a Protestant, Christian, Gentile, and native-born American citizen. The very center, the heart and soul of all clansmanship is kneeling before the fiery cross, the prime purpose over which no clansman will ever compromise is to maintain the purity of the white Caucasian blood, to the exclusion of all others, in the veins of the white man. We have that right. It is our will, and it is the will of Almighty God.
Thank you, Klansman Hill. The Klan inserts here a fundamental reason for its struggle, not against Roman Catholics, but against the dictator hierarchy of the Catholic Church. Catholic priests are today secretly and privately marrying Negroes with white Caucasians in every state of this Union, excepting those southern states where it's forbidden by law. A prime example of this unforgivable sin in this world or the next is that of the well-known forced integration Negroes in college here who became pregnant by a white student. They were married by a Catholic priest outside the state of Georgia. Priests from Minneapolis to Maine have performed this unholy ceremony. The Klan can give names of priests who have refused to marry blacks with whites, but who were ordered to do so by their bishops, forever polluting Almighty God's bloodstream of life. Many Protestant ministers are equally guilty, but their enormous treason against God is voluntary. That of the Catholic priest is on a military order from foreigners from Rome, Italy. The Catholic Church today is the absolute leader of mongrelization of the blood of the American people, and it will suffer the damnation and condemnation it deserves at the people's hands. It will be set back 500 years in history. Already it is losing every thinking and intelligent communicant with one drop of pride in the Caucasian race which discovered America and built it to its greatness. If any Catholic friend of ours can point out a greater sin against God, our Creator and Redeemer, we'd like to hear of it. No bishop or cardinal or pope will ever mesmerize the God of this universe into forgiving such befoulment of God's most perfect creation, the white man. The Klan invites every honest criticism of this statement, and the Klan will work hand in hand with any Catholic or anyone else who believes as it does. The secrecy in the Ku Klux Klan is exactly the same as in other fraternal orders like the Freemasons, the Odd Fellows, the Red Men, or the Knights of Columbus. The Klan of 1866 spread with the speed of lightning over the entire South. Justice, law, and order were returned to the hands of the white man who built this nation. And the exact same task lies before the American people again today. There is but one organization in America, one single banner under which Protestant white Christian Americans can rally that is not dominated by foreign, European, or Asiatic masters. That is the Knights of the Ku Klux Klan. Our entire government today is crushed under the heel of false foreign ideologies, which are the insane projects of religious maniacs or anti-Christians. Our government is more socialist than Russia or Rome. It is more communist than Israel or China or Cuba. Traitor politicians in Washington squander our wealth and military might like drunken fools, giving it away. But while our task is greater now than it was in 1866, the alignment of our Klan is great enough to give us victory once again for white America. There is no South or North. There is no East or West. There is only Protestant Christian white America against black race African Negroes and brown race Asiatic Jews. We predict that renegade Protestant ministers of the National Council of Churches breed and priests of the Roman Catholic hierarchy who have both embraced the communist cause will soon be smashed by their own communicants. We have long ago destroyed African slavery. To establish white slavery under Negro masters and Jewish domination is indeed progress with a vengeance, isn't it? But that is exactly the condition of which white America faces today. And for the same cause, the purchase of organized block Negro, Jew, Catholic votes by scallywag hyena politicians to remain in power, who are the money power of this nation. The poor ignorant Negro doesn't know it yet, but he's already lost many of his freedoms. And when it's over, what will he have left if he escapes deportation, which we doubt? Political freedom? Yes. Legal freedom? We doubt it. They have destroyed all chance of it before juries in any court by their revolutionary conduct. Social freedom? Never. No man and no government can legislate social equality by fiat. Every man who tries it will perish. This nation cannot exist half white and half black, and a mulatto citizenship is unthinkable, even at the cost of annihilation of one or the other races. God never meant that the Negro should leave his habitat or that the white man should invade the Negro's home. Our violation of this law is written in 2 centuries of shame and blood. The tragedy will never be closed until the black man is returned to his home, Africa. No matter what fools or traitors to our country may say, the Klan is not a hate-monger organization. The Klan is not anti-Catholic, anti-Jew, anti-Negro, or anti-foreign. The Klan is pro-Protestant, which is the only brand of Christianity that is free from foreign domination. The Klan is above all else pro-American. It will aid and assist all who believe in true freedom. It will fight to the bitter end any person or group whose actions prove otherwise, for a man is known by the company he keeps. The evil men who govern every Protestant denomination in the National Council of Churches and the Roman Catholic and Jewish leaders who have joined them in forever poisoning the bloodstream of our Caucasian race are more than traitor enemies of America. They are the greatest criminals in the history of mankind. They are not men of God. They come straight from the devil, and they are communists. In closing, we ask you to make a survey of every organization in America, be it civic, patriotic, military, social, political, or religious in character. There is not a single one that is not infiltrated and polluted with the blood of foreigners, non-Christians, and anti-Christians or anti-Americans, with the sole exception of the Knights of the Ku Klux Klan. Just as this courageous brand of men and women snatched the contamination of our bloodstream from eternal pollution and destruction in 1866, it will do it again today. Hear us, every man, woman, and child of our race. The slave runner scoundrels of today are filling our land with blacks from Africa, Jamaica, Puerto Rico, Haiti, and Cuba. There are more than 8 million brown race Asiatic Jews in America now who are here illegally and unfingerprinted. They must be driven out. The scallywag hyenas in Washington are daily destroying us by grinding our Protestant, white, Christian independence under the Constitution into the dust. The Emancipation Proclamation released the black from servitude by white men. The Civil Rights Bill of 1964 makes the white man the slave of the Negro. The Jew owns the Negro. Will the members of our proud white race, which is the highest of all mankind, consent to be ruled by black slaves of yesterday from the lowest race of mankind? Ask history that question. Will the race of men who speak the language of Burns and Shakespeare, Drake and Raleigh, bend the knee to brown race Jews who never had a culture? No, never. In 5,000 years of history, these Negroes, without even a language, have never rescued 1 foot of land from the ape or the adder. If you can meet our membership qualifications, we'll be glad to hear from you, for the Ku Klux Klan is going to save this nation. We want 5 million white Protestant Christians to gain our victory. We are unafraid of the most powerful forces the enemy can bring to bear, for our abiding faith lies solely in the invincible power of the fiery cross of our God. Now to close this recording, we present to you one of the noblest of Klansmen who has made a deep study of both Klan ritual and Klan history. We introduce the Imperial Wizard of the Federated Klans of Georgia, the Honorable Hugh Morris. Klansman Morris.
I should like to touch upon 2 portions of the ritual ceremony which can be made public, that you may know the character of the men and women we constantly look for as members of the Ku Klux Klan. These 2 portions of the rituals are a part of the entrance into the clan of accepted candidates who are about to be naturalized. The outer guard of the clan has just asked the clad, our conductor of the candidates, if they have been selected with care. The conductor replies that they are known and vouched for by clansmen in conclave assembled. Have they the marks of a clansman? That's the outer guard. The conductor replies, the distinguishing marks of a clansman are not found in the fiber of his garments or his social or financial standing, but are spiritual, namely a chivalric head, a compassionate heart, a prudent tongue, and a courageous will, all devoted to our country, our clan, our homes, and each other. These are the distinguishing marks of a clansman. Shortly after comes the prayer of the clan lecturer, or clocard. I have had the honor of being initiated into several secret fraternities of human brotherhood, and I can say to you truly that none is more touching or inspiring as the prayer of the clocard when the candidates stand on the threshold of the inner door of the clan. If you, a listener, in your daily life can earnestly endeavor to live up to this prayer, the Ku Klux Klan wants to know you. Let us pray. God, give us men. The invisible empire at a time like this demands strong minds, great hearts, true faith, and ready hands. Men whom the lust of office does not kill, men whom the spoils of office cannot buy, men who possess opinions and a will, men who have honor, men who will not lie, men who can stand before a demagogue and damn his treacherous flatteries without winking. Tall men, sun-crowned, who live above the fog in public duty and in private thinking. For while the rabble, with their thumb-worn creeds, their large professions and their little deeds, mingle in selfish strife, lo, freedom weeps. Wrong rules the land, and waiting justice sleeps. God, give us men. Men who serve not for selfish booty, but real men courageous, who flinch not at duty. Men of dependable character, and men of sterling worth. Then wrongs will be redressed, and rights will rule the earth. God, give us men. Sirs, will you, or each of you, by your daily life, as clansmen, endeavor to be an answer to this prayer? I repeat, ladies and gentlemen, if you can, America and the Klan needs you.
Ladies and gentlemen, an ideal clavern or unit of the Klan is about 100 people. Many begin with 50 in small communities, and some begin with several hundred. It depends also upon the size of your meeting hall. Initiations for men are $15, $10 for women. Dues generally are $2 per month. Do not forget your Klan's women. They are vital to the new and modern Klan. We'll send you a prize degree team to your town to induct your screened candidates. Write to the Honorable James R. Venable, National Knights of the Ku Klux Klan, Box 657 in Tucker, T-U-C-K-E-R, Tucker, Georgia. This is Wally Butterworth. Goodbye, all.